on the Dick Wolf versus Jim Hutton case. May I have the entry of appearances, please, first for the appellant. All right, thanks. Ms. Schultz, will you be doing the argument, I gather?
Yes.
Thanks very much. And for the Jim Hutton Educational Foundation.
Steve Bouchon for the Jim Hutton Educational Foundation. And with me is co-counsel Karen Henderson.
And you'll be doing the argument?
Yes.
Thanks very much. So this is a case that has been set for 1 hour. That means each side has a half an hour. Ms. Schultz, that means that if you wish to reserve some time for rebuttal, you'll need to keep track of that yourself, and there's a counter on the podium for you to be able to do that. So whenever you're ready, Ms. Schultz, go ahead, please.
May it please the court.
Counsel.
In the courtroom with us today are State Engineer Dick Wolf and Division Engineer David Nettles. This case is a protest to the Division 1 abandonment list. Today we are asking this court to reverse the water course determination and enter an order abandoning the Tip Jack Ditch water right. The water court made two mistakes in its order. First, the water court erred in determining that the engineers had not shown 10 years of non-use of the Tip Jack Ditch water right. And second, the water court erred in finding that even if the engineers had shown 10 years of non-use, the foundation had submitted sufficient evidence to rebut the presumption of abandonment. As abandonment is a finding of fact, the standard of review is highly deferential to the trial court. This court should not overturn the trial court's determination unless the record is wholly insufficient to support the water court's determination. I'd like to begin by giving an overview of all of the water rights that were discussed in the record below, as well as a brief timeline that's important in this case. The foundation owns five water rights. Three of those water rights were listed on the 2010 abandonment list, and only one of those water rights is at issue here today, the Tip Jack Ditch water right. I'll briefly explain all five using the map that's before you and up here. This is exhibit SC217 in the record below. And to orient you, in the corner is Bonnie Dam, which was constructed in 1952. Out of Bonnie Dam flows the South Fork of the Republican River, which meanders its way east until it reaches the state line. Also flowing out of Bonnie Dam is the first water right, which is the Hale Ditch water right. The Hale Ditch flows out of Bonnie Dam, south of the South Fork, and over to the Hutton Ranch. The Hale Ditch water right was the subject of case number 11-CW-186, which was tried at the same time as this case, but is not the subject of this appeal. The next water right on the river is the Tip Jack Ditch water right. The Tip Jack Ditch is located here. The Tip Jack Ditch water right was appropriated by Abner Spencer in 1889, and it was adjudicated in 1893 for 2 CFS for irrigation. In 1948, Roscoe Hutton acquired the Tip Jack Ditch water right. In 1950, he filed an amended statement of claim for the Tip Jack Ditch reflecting the construction of Bonnie Dam. As I mentioned, in 1952, Bonnie Dam was completed, which inundated the original point of diversion for the Tip Jack Ditch water right. And then in 1977, Roscoe Hutton applied for a change in point of diversion for the Tip Jack Ditch water right to this relocated point here. The water court in that case, W8667, awarded the change in plan of diversion that Roscoe Hutton asked for, and also stated, quote, all other aspects of the 1893 decree remain unchanged, but no other changes of this water right shall be done without prior approval of the water court, end quote. Now, the water court in this case found that water has never been diverted at this relocated point of diversion, but if it had been, the Tip Jack Ditch should have flowed in the northeast direction until it reached its place of use on the Hutton Ranch. Now, this smaller square shows the lands that were owned by Abner Spencer in 1889 when the Tip Jack Ditch was appropriated. Most of those lands are contained in Section 12. The water court made two other key findings about the Tip Jack Ditch. It found that this portion of the Tip Jack Ditch from its point of diversion to the Hale Road, which is this north-south road right here, mostly hidden under the label boxes. This portion of the ditch has not been used for decades. The water court also found that at the Hale Road, there is no culvert that connects the western portion of the ditch to the east and allows the water to flow to the Hutton Ranch.
Ms. Schultz, can I ask a point of clarification? Good
Please.
Morning. What, I can't tell how many miles that is. Just from the map, it looks like it's a really long distance. But how far is it actually from the dam to that property? Do you have an idea?
We don't have in the record an exact distance from the relocated point of diversion to the property. The original Tipjack Ditch, which was located under, which has been inundated, was just over 3 miles. And the relocated point of diversion has been moved approximately 1,000 feet, I believe is in the record. So it's probably about 2 miles, but I'm not 100%
okay. on that. No, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Now the next water right was also listed on the abandonment list, and it's the Hutton number 2, which is located right here. The Hutton number 2 water right was appropriated in 1954 and adjudicated in case number W8667. The Hutton number 2 is decreed for 4.92 CFS to irrigate all of section 12, which is the larger square on this map. Now the Hutton number 2 diverts by a sand dam in the river right here, which pushes water up into this blue line. This is what the foundation has called the inlet ditch. Then pushes water to the pump house here. The pump house is designed for 4.92 CFS. That pulls that water out of the inlet ditch and places it into a series of laterals to reach its place of use. One of those laterals is a remnant of the Tipjack Ditch, this eastern portion right here. The fourth water right is the Hutton number 1 water right, which is located here. It was also listed on the 2010 abandonment list. The Hutton number 1 water right was also appropriated in 1954. It was also adjudicated in case number W8667, and it's decreed for 12.9 CFS, also to irrigate all of section 12. The Hutton number 1 diverts again by a sand dam in the river and places the water into a series of laterals until it reaches its place of use throughout section 12. And the fifth and final water right is a well, which is located right here. This well is permitted in the Northern High Plains Designated Groundwater Basin, and it's permitted to irrigate 184 acres in section 12. Now, the timeline that's important in this case pertains to the ownership. In 1978, Roscoe Hutton owned the ranch and the Tipjack Ditch water right, and that is when he applied for and obtained a change of point of diversion for the Tipjack Ditch at this point here. In 1983, 5 years later, Roscoe Hutton passed away. By 1986, Jim Hutton, who is Roscoe's son, and Jim's wife, Thelma, owned the entire ranch and all of its water rights together. In the mid-90s, Thelma passed away, and the entire ownership of the ranch passed to Jim Hutton. Jim Hutton then owned, on his own, the entire ranch and all of the water rights associated with it. In 2000 or 2001, Jim Hutton entered into a lease with John Cure for the lands and water rights. The lease is a very important piece of evidence in this case because it's the last written document that we have evidencing Jim Hutton's understanding of his water rights at the time. And this lease lists 4, not 5, water rights. The one water right excluded is the Tipjack Ditch water right. In 2002, Jim Hutton passed away. And then in 2004, the ownership passed to the foundation. Now the engineers did not bring this appeal lightly. The engineers took a hard look at the record and searched for any evidence to support the water court's determinations regarding the Tipjack Ditch, Hutton 1 and Hutton 2. The engineers conceded that the record contains sufficient evidence to show that the Hutton 1 and Hutton 2 have not been abandoned, but we could not find any such evidence for the Tipjack Ditch water right.
But the water court has found that all 3 of those water rights were carried to its place of use through the Hutton number 2 ditch, basically. Is that right?
The water court did not find that the Tipjack Ditch water right was diverted at the Hutton number 2 point of diversion. The water court found that there was maintenance on this remnant of the tip jet ditch east of Hale Road and where the Hutton number 2 can place water into that portion of the structure. But the water court never found, and there's no evidence in the record that would have supported any finding, that a tip jet ditch water right was diverted at the Hutton number 2 point of diversion. The decree changing the point of diversion for the tip jet ditch didn't allow such a change. The pump capacity for the Hutton number 2 is limited to 4.92 CFS, which is the decreed amount for the Hutton number 2 water right. And there's simply no evidence in the record other than the testimony by Dan Patton, who is a friend of Jim Hutton and is now the on-site manager for the foundation, that he called the pump the tip jet ditch pump. Dan Patton never testified that Jim Hutton called this pump that the tip jet ditch, or that Jim Hutton understood or intended that he was diverting the tip jet ditch water right at the Hutton number 2 point of diversion.
However, the water court found that, but you're saying the evidence didn't support the finding.
No, the water court did not find that. The water court stated that the theory of the foundation was that the tip jet ditch water right was diverted at the Hutton number 2 point of diversion. But the water court never stated that its conclusion that the Hutton number 2 was...
Yeah, but it refused to enter an abandonment decree. So can you explain that to us?
Well, I think that's why we're here today, is that the water court did not make a finding that the tip jet ditch water was ever diverted anywhere. In fact, it found the opposite, that it had never been diverted, and yet the water court still found...
Well, I thought what it said was it hadn't been diverted through the relocated diversion point, right? The 1977?
Correct.
Right, it wasn't diverted through there. But let's suppose a hypothetical that it was diverted through another structure, an undercreek structure, for that water right, or one that, despite what the water court said about it, you should take it through the different point of diversion authorized in 1977 in view of the inundation of the original one. But let's just assume it was taken through another structure. Would that be a sufficient basis for a court finding that it was not abandoned, the water right was not abandoned?
If the facts supported that, yes. This court has held that diversions of a water right through an undecreed point of diversion are sufficient to rebut a presumption of abandonment. But here we don't have any facts that support an actual diversion of this water right at any other point, any undecreed point of diversion.
So this is a pretty good water judge. What happened?
Well, what happened was that the water court held the engineers to an incorrect standard in proving their prima facie case. In abandonment, which is a two-step process under the abandonment list, the engineers must first show 10 years of non-use to establish a presumption of abandonment. And then that once the presumption is established, the burden shifts to the water right owner to rebut the presumption. Here, the water court held, and I quote, that this court finds that the engineers have not established by a preponderance of the evidence that Jim Hutton abandoned the Tip Jack, Hutton 1, and Hutton 2 water rights. What the engineers had to do to establish their prima facie case was to show 10 years of non-use. The water court found at least 10 years of non-use by finding that the water right had never been diverted at its decreed point of diversion. And that should have shifted the burden to the foundation and colored the view that the water court took of the evidence. But the water court rather held that the engineers had to prove affirmatively abandonment up front. So the water court, I think, simply mixed the burden. And it makes sense, and the record below you'll see is quite confusing with the two cases going on at one time. We were trying very hard to be efficient and not call witnesses multiple times. So a good portion of the foundation's rebuttal case was presented to the court before the engineer's prima facie case in this, just in a matter of time. And it's easy to see how hearing evidence of a lack of intent to abandon, or that asserts to be evidence of a lack of intent to abandon, would color the view of what the engineer's prima facie burden was. The engineers had to show 10 years of non-use. The water court made specific findings about the tip jack ditch water right that show at least 10 years of non-use. Since 1978.
Counsel, can I just stop you there? I mean, so you're saying the water court made a legal error? Or are you saying the water court made a factual error, or more than one factual error? Or both? I thought you started out by saying the water court made factual errors, but now you're sounding like legal errors. So can you help me clear that up?
Abandonment's pretty tough when you talk about legal errors versus factual errors, because it all seems to be held to a factual standard. The water court made factual determinations about the tip jack ditch water right, and we believe those are correct, that the water right had never been diverted at this point of diversion. This structure has not been used for decades. It's impossible to deliver it past Hill Road to its place of use. But after making those factual determinations, the water court concluded that the engineers didn't show 10 years of non-use.
Well, no, didn't. Okay. Doesn't the water court say at one point, even that if that were true, there's ample evidence, let's just list like five or six things that shows that the presumption's been rebutted here. I mean, isn't that what the water court says?
Yes, that is what the water court says. And the error that the water court makes there is that it considered evidence of a lack of intent to abandon the Hutton 1 and Hutton 2 water rights as also evidence of intent to abandon the tip jack ditch water right. And I can go through that evidence. The water court relied on maintenance of structures, a 1991 conservation easement, a 1995 deed of trust, and the 2000 lease that I mentioned earlier. Now, the maintenance that was in the record and that the court mentions is maintenance of the Hutton number 2 point of diversion and the remnant of the tip jack ditch that acts as a lateral for the Hutton number 2 point of diversion. There is no evidence, and the court made findings that there's no evidence of maintenance of the entire structure for the tip jack ditch water right. So the maintenance is maintenance of Hutton 1 and Hutton 2.
So I guess you're saying that the water court just was not precise enough. Is that? It got confused about the evidence. It was not finding evidence particularly with regard to this right. Is that a basic argument?
Correct. The water court was not precise enough. And if it had been precise enough, it could not have reached the conclusion that it did, that the presumption of abandonment was rebutted for the tip jack ditch water right. The evidence that the water court relied on is not evidence about the tip jack ditch water right.
Okay, so could you just go through the rest of the list?
Absolutely.
I don't want to take everybody's time, but just quickly. So maintenance, that's wrong. What else?
The 1991 conservation easement preserved to Jim Hutton and his wife only the right to continue the operations of the ranch and the water rights that existed at the time. This was entered in 1991, and by 1988, the tip jack ditch had already been abandoned because it had not been diverted at its decreed point of diversion since 1978. So it did not exist at the time. But even if it did exist in 1991, the conservation easement does not specifically list the water rights that are preserved, and the portions of the conservation easement that discuss water rights are quite general and even have cross-references to paragraphs that don't exist in the conservation easement. It's not a clear showing of Jim Hutton's intent regarding the water rights at that time. The 1995 deed of trust is an $80,000 mortgage secured by the entire 4,000-plus acre branch and lists water rights as an appurtenance. It doesn't specifically list water rights, and there's no evidence in the record that reflects that the purpose of the mortgage was to preserve the water rights or do something with the water rights, or that the mortgage was given in consideration of the tip jack ditch water right. And then the lease in 2000 and 2001 highlights the problem that the water court had in viewing the three water rights together as opposed to separately. The lease is our last written documentation or document by Jim Hutton that reflects his understanding of his water rights at the time that it was written, and it includes only four water rights, and it lists them fairly clearly. It lists the well for alfalfa. It lists one third out of Balling Dam, which is the Hale Ditch, and it lists two dam ditch rights on the river, which are the Hutton 1 and Hutton 2 water rights diverted by sand dams in the river. It does not mention the Tipjack Ditch water right. So Jim Hutton, who is a man who is keenly aware of his water rights and their value, as found by the water court, did not list the fifth water right. He left it out. The lease is evidence of a lack of intent to abandon Hutton 1 and Hutton 2 and should have been viewed that way by the court, but it is evidence of Jim Hutton's abandonment of the Tipjack Ditch. So it serves different purposes in line with the different water rights.
Isn't the problem here that the water court is really conflating the two steps ultimately and didn't really address the issue of whether there was evidence that would trigger the statutory presumption of abandonment and just kind of jumped ahead in the end to the question of whether there really was intent to abandon? And so as I look at it, the question is what use should he have made of the decreed use? And as I see, the water right that's at issue is from the decreed point in, was it 77?
78.
Right, so that's, as he notes at the beginning of his analysis, that should have triggered the statutory presumption. And then the question just becomes, what use is there of the decreed use in evaluating abandonment in the end? That, and you're acknowledging, right, that under, is it Lingell and Means, that that can be used to establish the ultimate issue of whether there was intent to abandon, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I believe that you're correct. The water court conflated the two steps. It did not clearly determine that the presumption had been established and then view the remaining evidence in terms of rebutting the presumption.
So I guess what I'm struggling with in following up on what Justice Ive was just asking about, assuming that there was the lack of precision in sort of going through those two steps properly, given the record that you just went through in summary fashion, there's so much discussion about different aspects of the record. Is it really fair to say that the record's wholly insufficient to support the water court's finding on the ultimate issue of whether there's intent to abandon? Is it really necessary to remand after we encourage him to be more precise in the way we've just discussed, or do we have enough of a record just to resolve it ourselves? That's what I'm sort of struggling with.
You do have enough of a record to resolve this yourselves. The water court made the finding necessary that there has been non-use, which gives rise to the presumption of abandonment. And as I mentioned, there really is no evidence in the record of a lack of intent to abandon the Tipjack Ditch water right. And so this isn't a matter of weighing what evidence there might be in terms of rebutting a presumption. There simply is no evidence of a lack of intent to abandon the Tipjack Ditch water right.
Not at all.
No, none at all.
All right, thank you.
Well, I'm wondering about that because, you know, on page 9 of the water court's discussion here, these appear to be real men whose word was their bond. A handshake was all necessary to seal many a deal. An important component of the ranching operation was the water rights. The Huttons were also keenly aware of the value of the water rights and the importance of maintaining these rights. So I think what the water court is telling us, that when he looks at the entire package in the ranch, the idea of keeping it together and passing it on and ultimately creating this educational foundation, that there was no intent to abandon them, and it was sufficient to show that they were treating them as a package, right? This family was treating these water rights as a package and certainly didn't intend to abandon them. So what do you have to say about that package it up kind of analysis?
Well, in Colorado, water rights are individual entities. And so each of these three appropriations were separate appropriations, decreed to separate structures for separate uses. And while the family, while Jim Hutton and his father, Roscoe Hutton, used all three in conjunction on, or used two at least, in conjunction for maintaining their entire ranch, each of those water rights had to have been appropriated separately and should be evaluated for abandonment separately. And even though the foundation was created, or Jim Hutton may have done work on one or two, the law does not allow for some work on a completely separate water right, or some use of a completely separate water right, to be completed and imputed to a different water right.
Well, let's say it's imputed to the ranch, you know. The ranch needed this water, you know, for its purposes. They were appropriated for such. And so they're looking for the intent of the, you know, appropriator, you know. And there's arguably some evidence. Now, you've told us that he left out the Tip Jack. So that's pretty interesting. The water court didn't analyze that. Wouldn't it be a better situation to send this back for the water court and, as Justice Hood suggested, and analyze that particular water right?
I think that this court has everything it needs to simply determine that the Tip Jack ditch has been abandoned, that there is no evidence in the record to support any finding of a lack of intent to abandon the Tip Jack ditch water right. The record is complete. There is no evidence to be weighed. It is simply that there isn't specific evidence of Jim Hutton's intent not to abandon the Tip Jack ditch water. There's only evidence that he believed it was already gone. With that, Your Honors, I would like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Sure, you may do so. Thank you. Mr. Bouchon?
Good morning, Steve Bouchon on behalf of the Jim Hutton Educational Foundation. And with me today is Jerry Gross, the president and chairman of the foundation. So, at issue in this appeal is just the court's factual finding regarding the Tip Jack Ditch, as you just heard. But before I jump into that order and talk about all the evidence that does support the water court's decision, I want to give you just a little bit of background. The Tip Jack Ditch water right is part of the much larger Hutton Ranch, which is over 4,000 acres, and it sits almost on the state line. And the ranch and the water rights were owned by the Hutton family since the 1940s. First Roscoe Hutton, and then his son, Jim Hutton. Now, before Jim Hutton passed away, he first lost his wife, then he lost his son in a car crash in 1998. And so, having lost his son, who was going to be the person who took over the ranch, that's when Jim Hutton decided to create the Educational Foundation. Now, one of the purposes of the foundation is testified to by three different witnesses. It was to keep the ranch and the water rights together as a whole. They didn't want it getting broken up. Also, that was going to be the funding mechanism for the foundation. Lease the land and water rights to create funds for the foundation to provide low interest loans for nurses. And, in fact, shortly before Jim Hutton's death, he did enter into a lease, long-term lease. And I strongly disagree that it didn't include the Tip Jack Ditch. And I'll get into that in more detail in a minute, but the lessee testified that it did include the Tip Jack Ditch waterway. Now, the ranch includes, as Ms. Schultz indicated, four different waterways. We're really just focusing on three of them today. But one of the key components of the Tip Jack Ditch water right is its seniority. It's senior to the Republican River Compact. The Hutton number one and two are junior to that compact. And the reason why that becomes important is this. For a long time, water rights weren't very tightly administered down here near the state line. And that changed in the early 2000s with the Republican River Compact litigation. And essentially what happened in that case was the United States Supreme Court held that to the extent all these groundwater wells are depleting the rivers,
you state, so that's part of your compact application. So once they developed the model, they realized Colorado was going to be at risk of being out of compliance with the compact. Suddenly we have a lot of focus on the surface water rights in this part of the state. In fact, it's been our contention all along, that's what really led to this litigation and this appeal. Just give you one example. In 2008, the foundation was diverting its tip-jack ditch water right, cleaned everything out, it was working on it. The water commissioner shows up, calls assistant state engineer Ken Knox, is instructed by Mr. Knox to start making inquiries about whether or not they have a 404 permit. There's some disagreement on what actually said on the ground.
Is this in the record, by the way?
Yes, it is. Okay. If you look at the cross-examination that I had of Mr. Keeler, the water commissioner, he says he was instructed to make an inquiry about a 404 permit. Now, whatever actually took place on the ground is conflicting testimony, but what happened was the foundation took out its diversion structure, went out to try to get a 404 permit, only to find out later they couldn't get a 404 permit because they didn't need a 404 permit. There's also, you'll see in the record, email chains talking about how the state and division engineer decided to get aggressive on abandonment in the Republican River Basin because of compact compliance concerns.
I don't really understand what that has to do with the evidence before the water court on the abandonment issue. And besides, it appeared to me that, at least from the Attorney General's brief and the Republican District's brief, the issue about getting aggressive just to get aggressive was set aside in the administrative process. Is that right?
Yes, Justice Hobbs, that's what they testified to. The only point I would make is that the abandonment reports that became the basis for this litigation, they came out one day after the water commissioner received the email to get aggressive. So while they maybe later changed their position on that, the abandonment reports that became the predicate for this litigation came out one day later. But I'll move on that issue. The Hill Ditch also was put under a curtailment order. That became the second case that the water court heard. And the state also argued that that had been abandoned. And so the reason you have all 6 days of record in front of you is because some of the witnesses testified only once for both cases. And in other cases, when they came in the second time to testify, they were actually relying in part upon the earlier testimony. So you have all 6 days of that record. But the water court heard that evidence. The judge was very active. He asked questions of each of the witnesses. And after considering all that, he issued two orders and ruled in favor of the foundation on all four of its water rights. This appeal, so keep in mind, they were trying to abandon all four water rights. This appeal addresses just the tip-jack ditch. And as Mitchell said, critical to that determination by the water court are two findings. Number one, the state didn't meet its burden. And number two, if it had met its burden, the foundation presented ample evidence to rebut any presumption of abandonment. So I do believe the water court, if you look at it, when it sets forth a standard, it sets forth the black letter law on abandonment and applying it. Burden of proof on the state, and in any event, it doesn't matter because the foundation presented all sorts of evidence to rebut the presumption.
Well, this 1970s relocation and the pretty clear direction that the diversion was to go through that relocated point of diversion. I mean, that is in the record, and the court did find that didn't happen, correct?
If I follow...
It was never utilized, was it?
So, what the water court held, and I think you were on this point with Ms. Schultz, Justice Hobbs, the water court held specifically that the tip-jack ditch was being diverted at the Hutton No. 2 inlet ditch.
Okay, now, so what's the evidence in the record that shows that that actually occurred?
Okay. So, what the water court does in its order is it walks through all the evidence that the state presented for its burden of proof, and it rejects it, each piece of evidence, every category of evidence that the state presented. And I think that's important just to make sure it's clear that the water court really did an excellent job of walking through their evidence, which is diversion records, the state condition of the ditch.
and the fact that that pump house had the electricity disconnected. And the judge found none of that compelling. But the evidence that you're asking about, Justice Hobbs, is a couple of fold. First of all, the judge found that as of about 1961, you can't see the Kipchak Ditch west of the county road. It hadn't been in use a long time. But east of the county road, you can see the ditch in every single aerial photograph. It's well maintained. It looks like it's being used east of the county road, which is where the inlet ditch, the Hutton No. 2 inlet ditch, would feed it. So that was a critical piece of evidence in the court's findings.
But doesn't the fact that it's not coming from the Kipchak Ditch at that point establish that he was wrong on issue one? Ultimately, you're saying it doesn't matter because the fact that he's right on issue two renders him being wrong on issue one moot, essentially. Because the evidence ultimately on abandonment or lack of intent to abandon is sufficient that it renders moot his failure to apply the statutory presumption of abandonment. Do you follow my question?
I think so. And so I'm going to deviate from answering Justice Hobbs' question.
Well, I didn't answer
that. So, no, I think that's a great question. So what does the state argue?
I think we're ultimately asking the same thing in different ways.
I think
he's
so.
He's doing it more artfully because he knows a lot more about this.
You didn't? No, I didn't say that. No, so what the state presented at trial was it relied, first and foremost, on its own diversion. That was its primary evidence. And what the water court held is those records don't show lack of diversion. They show lack of information, lack of administration. The judge gave all sorts of examples of why that was unreliable. What else did the state rely upon? They said, well, the Kipchak Ditch is in such a terrible, degraded shape. Well, that's true, but only west, right? Dating all the way back to 1961, probably here. But not east. Lots of testimony that was well maintained. And then third, they relied upon the fact that that pump station at the inlet ditch.
Can I pick up right there on that point? Recognizing that the water court, I think everyone would agree, that water was not diverted from that relocated diversion point west of the Hill Road for many years. But does maintenance of the tail end of that structure necessarily reflect use of Kipchak water rights in that structure as opposed to Hutton water rights in that structure? What's the evidence that Kipchak water right was being diverted there and used in that structure?
Okay. That's a much better version of
that. So let me answer that question. So first, you heard Ms. Schultz talk about the first map and filing statement that Roscoe Hutton filed. So let's talk about that, and I'm just going to walk through real quickly the evidence that you asked for. So when they built the dam on top of the ditch, he comes in and files a map and filing statement. That's the old-fashioned way of giving notice of what you're doing. And he moves the diversion point down around the dam. There was unrefuted evidence that that was never going to work. Too low of gradient, you're never going to get 2 CFS to the property. So it's not surprising, a couple of years later, he files a second map and filing statement. This one's called the Roscoe Hutton Irrigation Map. And what it shows is it shows the inlet ditch, we call it the inlet, sometimes called the Hutton No. 2 inlet, but it shows that, it shows a Hutton No. 2, a Hutton No. 1, it shows a possible pipeline connection up to the Kipchak Ditch, another one off the Hutton No. 1. Now we know from aerial photographs those pipelines never got built. But what you have is, and you can see it in all the old aerials, you have a system set up so that once that water is lifted up out of that inlet, put into a big cement splitter box that's still there, it can either go to the Kipchak or it can go to the Hutton No. 2 ditch and lateral system. Two separate ditches. Now, the best evidence of what Roscoe Hutton intended is in his own handwritten letters. So he wrote to the Division of Water Resources in 1971, and he's expressing his desire to retain his senior Kipchak ditch priority. Then he says this, now I think you already have this information, but I want to remind you, these are his words, I had to relocate the location of the Kipchak Ditch headgate to Hutton No. 1 and Hutton No. 2 in order to use the water. So
That's a very clear statement of his intent, that he moved the Kipchak ditch down to the Hutton 1 and 2. That was his intent. There's another handwritten well permit application at about the same time. Basically says the same type of thing. It says, and I'll paraphrase because it's not perfectly clear, but I amended my first map and file statement down to the Hagate number 1 and 2 by my second map and file statement. So now there was plenty of evidence that that's what he intended. Now, if we turn to look at the water court application itself, there's also a lot, I should stop for one second, there's a lot of testimony from the community that this would be Max Sned and Ann Patton, that this is what's known as the Kipchak ditch without number twos. That's how Jim Hutton himself was referred to, right? But if you look at the water court application, which was filed in 1977, it's a response to the Kipchak ditch being put on the abandonment list. It was put on the preliminary abandonment list because the state finally realized that the old original head gate had been destroyed by the dam. And in response to that, so this is after Roscoe Hutton has already told the state he's moved his Kipchak ditch down to head gate number 1 and 2 on the Hutton, for the Hutton number 1 and 2. He files not one, he files four water court applications. And the first one filed the first map and file statement. It talks about how he relocated his original Kipchak ditch technique down to the amended location. But if you look then for the relief he asked for a finding of no abandonment, and he asked for 9 CFS under a junior priority based upon the map and filing statement, 1949. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Then he files another two water court applications, one on the Hutton number 1, one on the Hutton number 2, that seemed to file more or less the second map and filing statement. And then he files another one on a designated groundwater well, which is the water court doesn't have jurisdiction on that. So what did the court do with that kind of information? It said, okay, we'll grant you 2 CFS under your Kipchak ditch at that point further west that corresponds to the first map and filing statement. Problem is, we know that at that time, there was no ditch there. And there hadn't been a ditch there for a long time. We also know that 2 CFS isn't going to work at that location. Probably wouldn't work with 9 CFS. But it wasn't going to work. And he didn't have a ditch. And we also know that Roscoe Hutton thought he had already moved his Kipchak ditch water right down to Hutton 1 and 2 in his map and filing statements. So that's the 1978 decree. It's not a picture of clarity, but that's what happened. But everything before that and everything after that would indicate he continued to take the Kipchak ditch water right at the inlet too, at the Hutton number 2 inlet, irrigate the lands. It's much closer to the lands that were historically irrigated by it, far less ditch loss. And to hold otherwise, without any evidence, would be to say that he walked away from his senior water right, pre-compact water right, despite the fact that he had already told the state he didn't want to do that, and started using the Hutton number 2 water right not only to irrigate under the Hutton number 2 ditch system, to irrigate under the Kipchak.
Well, so, why is that necessarily so? Because, you know, he's right near the state line, so maybe a junior priority will serve the purpose. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead and answer that.
So, you're right. There was not a lot of administration going on, Justice Hubbs. But if there's one thing somebody knows about water rights, it's older is better. In his written statement, his handwritten letter to the Division of Water Resources said that he wants to hold on to that senior priority. That would be my response.
So, in light of everything that you just shared about this history, though, it's certainly there's never been a decree change in version for the Kipchak water right to the Hutton 2 point of diversion, right? Nothing formally decreed.
Right.
Any point. But where, to what extent did Can you point us to something in the water court's, our water court's order here that sort of took that into account as evidence of the use of that water right at that diversion point?
So I think if you look through the water court's order, implicit in all of it is the fact that the court, the judge understood that they had to prove 10 or more years of non-use, and they didn't offer any evidence to prove it. Most of the evidence was actually presented by the foundation. That's what he relied upon. But if you look just at his conclusion, which might be the best place, and this would be, I think, contrary to something Ms. Schultz said earlier, says, I issue you this order. The court is not authorizing the foundation to continue diverting the Tipchak Ditch water right as decreed in case number 18-18162 and W-8667 from the Hutton to Ditch. So the judge clearly understood that the Tipchak Ditch water right was being diverted at the Hutton number 2. And there's a very short distance. You can see the old ditch. It's on all the aerial photographs, but that's how they're getting the Tipchak Ditch water right into the Tipchak Ditch.
So are we back ultimately to it being, and I don't mean to oversimplify this, but are we back to this lack of precision, again, to follow up on what Justice Ives was talking about at the outset with opposing counsel, to being sort of a loose cannon? Because from your standpoint, at the end of the day, there's sufficient evidence of lack of intent to abandon that, and that maybe this is exactly where Hartman was coming from, too, or Judge Hartman, I should say.
Well, I think that's certainly one conclusion. When I read his order, having sat through the trial, I think he lays out the standard. They had the burden of proof. And then he walks through their diversion records and all the facts that they presented. Said, you didn't get your burden of proof. You haven't proved to me that the Tipchak Ditch was not used for, because no matter what diversion point is being used, it's still their burden of proving 10 years or more. But then I think ultimately he says, well, and there's all this other evidence. And I've only gone through some of it. I mean, you can go, for example, look at those 2008, 2010 internal emails. The state was also thought that the Tipchak Ditch water right was being diverted at the Hutton number 2 inlet, right? I mean, this was pretty well understood at the time. So it was their position. If you look at Dave Nettles' testimony, he doesn't say the non-use began in 1977, I think it's Ms. Schultz. He says it began in 1985. And the water court picked up on that. That's in its order. 1985 is what? That's when the electricity was disconnected from the old Tipchak Ditch pump house, which sits at the end of the inlet ditch. So their position had all, they always had thought that this was where the Tipchak Ditch water right had been. Right.
So how's that work? I mean, how did they lift the water into the splitter box?
Well, it's another thing that the court kind of goes through, because that was one of the pieces of evidence. Aha, the electricity was disconnected. It was connected in 63, disconnected in 85. But as the water court finds, judge says, but I can look at the aerial photographs. I see water in the inlet ditch. I see irrigation not only occurring under the Hutton number 2 ditch and lateral system. I see it occurring under the Tipchak ditch system before the electricity was connected. And after the electricity was disconnected. So clearly there was an alternative means of getting the water up and into the splitter box that used these two separate ditch systems. And in fact, there was testimony on what that was by Dan Patton. There was a separate pumping mechanism that Mr. Hutton used off of a tractor. He ran a tractor flywheel, and that's how he would pump water up and get it into his ditch system. So the court walked through those pieces of evidence. So probably a couple other points on the evidence that the court relied upon. It did find that there was continuous irrigation occurring under all three separate ditch systems. And the Tipchak Ditch water right is the one that's decreed to the Tipchak Ditch. The court found, in particular, Dan Patton,
And Max doesn't to be credible. In fact, he seems very credible. And that was in the Hale Ditch order. And they're the old timers who, Dan Patton's the one who used to help maintain the ditches, help sometimes irrigate. He knew all about the Tipjack Ditch. He had never heard about the Hot Ditch. Either had Max Nedden. Max Nedden used to see the water getting diverted up, backed up east of the county road. That's how he knew Jim Hutton was irrigating under the Tipjack Ditch. And again, this is all Jim Hutton. That's what Jim Hutton called it. And if you look at the lease agreement, because that's one of the key pieces of evidence, it's not perfectly clear. He talks about dam ditch diversions. But the lessee testified that he, it was his understanding, it included all the surface water rights. And there are four surface water rights. And based upon what Jim Hutton told him, that one of those dam ditch diversion spots included the Hutton number two and the Tipjack ditch. So there is lots and lots and lots of evidence in the record to support what the Watergate Court ruled.
So just to make sure I understand your comment about the lease agreement, you're saying that this sort of generic reference to dam ditch rights would be inclusive of the Tipjack water right being diverted at Hutton number two, sort of in connection with everything else you've described about that history?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Now, and then also, the Water Court, as Justice Hobbs noted earlier, found all sorts of other reasons how the Hutton family was so keenly aware of the value of its water rights, that when they did a conservation easement, they retained the ability to maintain all the irrigation ditches, maintain the ability to irrigate with all the water rights that they owned. And there's no question in the record, they owned the Tipjack Ditch at that time. 1991, I think, was the date of the conservation.
Unless they decided to walk away from that for other reasons. I mean, but
if they had decided to, if they had somehow abandoned it without a ruling of abandonment in 6 years between 1985 and 1991, that's what would have had to have happened if they had didn't think they owned it anymore.
Yeah. Now, for an historical consumptive use analysis under the original appropriation, we don't count in a change of water right proceeding the water taken through an undercreed pointed diversion. However, you alluded to a case or cases that said that for abandonment purposes, using water through an undercreed pointed diversion is evidence that you prove that there was no intent to abandon. Which cases are those?
Okay.
We cited four cases in our brief to this court. And in preparing for oral argument, I realized we cited two additional cases in our trial brief to the Water Court. I can provide those. They're in the briefs. It's Corey v. Long, Means v. Pratt, Langle v. Davis, the East Twin Lakes Ditch case, the Grazer v. Hagler case, and the Puchulo v. Heath case. But they all stand for the same proposition. And that is, if water is being diverted at the wrong location, whether that's intentional or not intentional, that's not abandonment. In fact, that shows and demonstrates an intent not to abandon. And I have not heard the state argue against that well-established precedent.
How does one decide that it's the water being diverted at a different point of diversion rather than a new appropriation or a new diversion?
Well, I think in this case, that is based upon the fact that the first map and filing statement, there's unrefuted testimony that was never going to work. It was too low of a gradient, so he had to move it back down even further to the Hutton number two inlet. We have his written statements to that effect. We have, where he said that he had to move the Tipjack Ditch water right down to the Hutton number one, number two, in order to be able to use it. So we have lots of evidence in the record. We have the testimony of all the local people, how he continued to maintain the Tipjack Ditch and use the Tipjack Ditch over time. So I think there's lots of different pieces of evidence in the record that would support, in this case, that it was the Tipjack Ditch Water Act being exercised at the Hutton number two inlet in addition to the Hutton number two.
So what it depends on then is evidence of the intent at the time of the change of point of diversion of the rights holder?
Yes, I would say it would be evidence of the intent
And in this case, that evidence of intent is further supported by physical evidence on the ground. So what I mean by that is, and this is something that the Water Corp relied real heavily upon. We go back to 1961 and probably earlier. The Tipjack Ditch doesn't exist anymore west of that inlet ditch in County Road. So at the time they filed that Water Corp application, there was no way to get Tipjack Ditch water from the first amended point, which is located west of the inlet ditch. And so that, you know, perhaps if they got the full 9 CFS, which is what they asked for, maybe they go out and clean the ditch and they find a way to, because now they've got a lot of water, but they didn't get the 9 CFS.
Is it essential to this theory of a changed point of diversion, but still that being evidence of no intent to abandon, that some portion of the ditch, of the same ditch, be used? Or could one not only change the point of diversion, but change the ditch through which it flows as well, as long as he was applying it to the original purpose, and say it was my intent always to use that same right, I just was doing it in a completely different way?
There, of the six cases that I mentioned, there are lots of different fact patterns. And if I recall right, the Lengel v. Davis has a fact pattern that actually where they found it more efficient to move two or three water rights to one ditch. So for a couple of those water rights, that would suggest that perhaps they were using a different ditch. Certainly it's a lot cleaner and simpler in a case like this, where the historical Tipjack Ditch alignment is still there, being maintained, being used, and once the water is lifted up out of the inlet, it can go either to the Hutton number 2 ditch system, or it can go to the Tipjack.
Could I follow up just one point? Would you care to comment on what the engineer was saying about the capacity of the pump and it not having the capacity to pump beyond what the Hutton number 2 would have?
There was no evidence in the record on what the capacity of that old pump station was. I believe they were referring to was the second map of violence statement said that the pipeline, which was never built, and the pump combined were the 4.454 CFS, whatever that number was. But we also know that he had alternative means of diverting water that he used, and so there was no evidence on what the total capacity was. In any event, there would be ample capacity to divert the 2 CFS of the senior priority.
You wouldn't be saying, though, that if he diverted no more than was allowed under the Hutton 2, that you wouldn't be saying, but he could decide he wanted to call that part the Tipjack Ditch and part the Hutton 2, and that would be enough to show a lack of abandonment.
No, I think in this case, the evidence is that he was always using the Tipjack Ditch water right at this point, 2 CFS. Then on top of that, there were times when he was diverting the Hutton number 2, and I think that's part of the reason why. I mean, the state decided to only appeal one of the four water rights. And so, I mean, there's not, we don't, because they waited to file the abandonment case after Jim Hutton and his son Jerry and his wife, the three people, the Hutton family, were all deceased. I mean, we had to base it upon all the circumstantial and direct evidence that we could find.
Thank you, Mr. Bouchon.
Thank you.
Mr. Schultz, or Ms. Schultz, sorry.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd like to start by saying that there is no direct evidence in the record of Jim Hutton's thought or intent or action that he thought he was diverting the Tipjack Ditch water right at the Hutton number 2 point of diversion. The evidence pointed to is testimony by a neighbor and testimony by a friend, not even that Jim Hutton indicated to them in any way that he was diverting the Tipjack Ditch water right, but just that they called the Hutton number 2 structure the Tipjack. And this makes sense. The Hutton number 2 uses as one of its laterals a portion of the Tipjack Ditch structure. It's logical that something that has had a name since 1889 may retain that name even though the water right that's flowing in it changes. One of the points that Mr. Bouchon was making is that the Tipjack Ditch has been diverted at the Hutton number 2 point of diversion and the pump could be powered by electricity or some other way, but that power doesn't change that the capacity, as indicated in the filing statement, which led to the decreed water right, was 4.92 CFS. There's no evidence of an enlarged capacity.
Wouldn't it be logical to assume, in deference to Colorado's ability to utilize its waters in a senior water right affected by a compact, that whether, if you can't color the water, that the senior priority for the Tipjack Ditch, senior to the compact, would be the preferred water right being used. Then you would fall back to the Dutton number 2 junior right. So why isn't it the way these water rights are postured in the legal situation we're in? Why shouldn't we just assume, as maybe the water court did, was that he was using the Tipjack senior to the compact water right?
Well, there's no evidence from Jim Hutton that he thought he was doing that or that he intended to. And what we do have is in 1977, Roscoe Hutton applying to change the point of diversion for his water right, for the Tipjack Ditch water right, to this relocated point of diversion, not to the Hutton number 2 point of diversion, at the same time as he was applying for the water right at Hutton number 2. He could have easily, if his true intent was to divert the Tipjack Ditch water right at the Hutton number 2 point of diversion, he could have gotten that alternate point of diversion at that time, or, as advised by the court then, that there were no other changes authorized at the Tipjack Ditch water right at the time, he could have gone back to water court and saw a new change of point of diversion for the Tipjack Ditch water right at the Hutton number 2 point of diversion. Rather, he walked away from it. He didn't divert water at the decreed point of diversion he got for his 2 CFS senior water right. And instead, he used the Hutton number 1 and Hutton number 2, which had larger water rights, 4.92 CFS and 12.9 CFS, to irrigate a larger area, including most of the irrigable lands under the Tipjack Ditch water right. And
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Go ahead. Do we care about the non-use of the decreed point of diversion in part because of the practical implications for the division engineer in trying to ascertain whether there was a non-decreed use somewhere else along this this larger ditch line?
We absolutely do. If the engineer's burden in the abandonment list proceedings is to not only show non-use at the decreed point of diversion and for the decreed purposes or places of use of a water right, but also to prove affirmatively that it has never been used unlawfully at any undecreed point of diversion, there will be no more abandonment lists. The division engineer cannot possibly have the capacity to prove as their burden that the decree hasn't been followed and that there's been no undecreed use. I'm almost out of time. If Justice, you had a question?
It's okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. I want to thank both counsel, Ms. Schultz, Mr. Bouchon. We're going to take only a 10-minute recess to allow the court